Right now, Bruce Pratt is here with this week's Sports Lit 101. What are we talking about, Bruce?
Well, we're talking about something that I never really gave any thought to, and I'm surprised I didn't. The book is called Sporting Realities, Critical Readings of the Sports Documentary, edited by Samantha M. Shepherd and our friend of the show, Travis Vogan, who's our expert on ESPN and a lot of other things like that. And this is, in fact, and I think I remember, I've been looking through the book. I'm taking this one essay at a time. It'd be too much to unpack for one book. And not every essay, I think, is going to be something that's really going to work for our audience. But boy, this one was designed for downtown. In the 1940s and 50s, television shows were renewed based on the number of viewers. If they had high ratings, and it's in the 50s we started, they renewed them. But in the 1960s, it was a fundamental change. The Beverly Hillbillies did great. They canceled it. Candid Camera did great. They canceled it. Why? Because advertisers felt that they weren't reaching. Those shows were not watched by the people they wanted to reach.
Right. CBS had the purge of what they called rural shows.
Exactly. Exactly. And one of the things that happened is that before, this is all pre-cable becoming a major source of our viewing, is that sports then were seen as something that wasn't television. It was just an event. You went to see an event. It wasn't supposed to be anything cultured. It was supposed to be a distraction, whereas the dramas on TV were supposed to be the things that we were really looking at. Then what happens, though, is in the 90s, when cable really starts to grab hold, what we think of as quality television, or that second golden age of television, and you can decide when it begins and if it's still on and all that. I mean, I'm not going to get into that debate. But the hour-long drama on HBO and the like becomes what we think of as quality TV. It's what Friends isn't. It's what other things on TV aren't, because it's an uninterrupted hour, a drama, and it's supposed to be deeper and deeper than we're seeing on network TV. And quality has always been linked to certain narratives, not because they're aesthetically superior, this particular author writes, but the ability to serve as a contingent rallying point where disparate uses and values can be rendered culturally or economically productive. In other words, we're going to tell you it's highbrow television. And then, of course, you start to get that. You get The Wire, and you get Mad Men, and you get Breaking Bad, and you get these series which, over the time, are more like movies than they are like television. And when that starts to separate, the ESPN and HBO lights start to go on in their heads, and they start thinking about how they can position certain sports to attract the 18 to 49-year-old male, but not just the 18 to 49-year-old male who wants to watch a Budweiser commercial and a basketball game, but who's invested enough in the story of the sport to really want to get into that particular piece. So I would argue that the ESPN's 30 for 30 with Bob Lee was when that really began, because he was brilliant. What I didn't realize, because I've never had HBO, was that there were a number of other documentaries that were very much important in developing this idea that this is highbrow, this is quality, this is something that is not TV, which I think was HBO's slogan at one point.
Where it's not TV, it's HBO.
Not HBO. But so then what happens is the press gets interested. And this is the part I hadn't really thought of. Prior to the early 2000s, there were no Emmys and Peabody Awards given out to sports program. They weren't getting any of them.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I was stunned. In fact, the reason I studied there for a minute, I lost my place. I had the page where that happened. But when that started to happen, when shows like Made in America, The Price of Gold, some of the ESPN's 30 for 30, the film Big Shot, when those started to come around, people started reviewing them the way they reviewed movies. And the press started to do that, and not just the local newspapers, but this was, you know, the Los Angeles Times, the New York Times, the Atlantic Monthly, journals that had a certain panache, a certain cachet to them, Rolling Stone. And when that happened, then the industry's people started, I mean, the press started paying attention to that. The industry people said, now that they're paying attention to us, let's see what we're doing with the demographics. And what they found out was they were killing it. They were absolutely killing it. That just the people they wanted to reach were indeed the people that were watching. They were still reaching the older generation. They were still reaching people my age. But they were reaching that those guys in their 30s and 40s that have the money. And then they discovered that was the gold mine because the advertisers would pay. Anheuser-Busch will pay almost anything to be involved in those things because they want to be identified with highbrow sports. They don't, you know, we think of it now as Budweiser, you know, that Budweiser spills more in a day than your local craft brewer makes in a year, right? And craft brews became sort of the cachet. So Budweiser and Miller and all these people, they get back into the game. And what's happening now is the sports documentary is emerging as just a documentary. That the sports, because most networks divided their sports people and their non-sports people into separate departments. We've certainly seen that with Fox.
Well, and HBO has essentially shut down their sports division. They used to have a lot of live sporting events. I mean, they were the home of boxing for many, many years. And now Brian Gumbel's Real Sports is about the only thing they have left.
And it's because the things that they were showing, the kids weren't watching. What of the four big sports, who has the most affluent audience?
Oh, gosh. I would say probably baseball.
No. Hockey by far.
Really?
By twice.
But it's such a small audience.
Exactly. But because that's the reason that there was all the bidding wars for the NHL the last several times around have been because the target marketing, it's more important to the advertisers to know that the people watching are likely to buy their product than it is to know lots of people are watching.
Hmm.
In fact, what's really interesting is, and football comes in next, and basketball, and then the last of them is baseball. Why? Because how many baseball games are there in a year? There are 162, right? No one's going to invest the same kind of money for 162 games. It changes when the playoffs and the World Series come around, right? Because there's this new reinvestment in it. But sports that used to, they said, you know what network draws the highest revenue per ad?
I don't know.
The Golf Channel.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
Which makes sense, right? Because virtually no one who's playing golf, who's watching cable TV, is not someone who's affluent because golf is an expensive sport. If you play the public links, I realize it's different. But people I know who are into golf, they have a $20,000 bill every year just for the country club they belong to so that, you know, they're really invested. The Tennis Channel, another one where the advertisers will pay a lot for a spot because they know what they're getting. So what I've done with this book and is that this is the introduction and this first article are what I'm concentrating on today, which is the documentary is Quality Sports Television by Brandon Buehler. Brandon Buehler, we will get him on, Brandon Buehler, pretty soon. But Travis is going to come on with Samantha, his other editor for this, and they're going to unpack the book for us across the whole book, because there's way too much for a little mind like mine to handle. But there are some things that we'll be talking about how does sports change as a documentary, and how do sports movies change, and like once women are in the locker room as reporters. Never would have thought about that changing the content of documentaries, but it did. So this book really threw me for a loop, because when I got it, I thought, well, here's another college professor book, and it's got elements of that. If I hear the word discursive one more time, I'm gonna go crazy. But I've only skimmed to the Black Athlete Dying Young, documenting and mythologizing Len Bias and Ben Wilson. You know, these deciding how great these people would have been, and they never played, right?
Right.
You know, but how documentaries like that bear a debt to Brian Song and the like. So I think this is going to be a really fun time. I've just made contact with Travis today, and we're setting these things up. But it's really amazing when you think about how how sports and regular programming were completely different, and now you're seeing them start to merge. And I was thinking, it's just like downtown.
Imagine,
you know,
that
we have so much. Yeah, like you're ahead of the curve. Where I said to Travis, because the kind of people that you talk to as documentarians are the kind of people whose documentaries the sports people are trying to emulate. They want to be like Ken Burns. You know, they want to do that kind of thing. They want to have the experts like Doris Kearns Goodwin. They've seen what PBS, what Burns did with baseball and the like, and they're and Ali, and they're beginning to see how all that pulls together. So I think it's going to be a very very interesting ride through the rest of this book.
Excellent. We're looking forward to hearing more about that and talking with the folks involved as well. It's 4:47. Thank you, Bruce.
My pleasure, sir.
Being a financial advisor is about more than money. It's about knowing your clients and what matters to them. Talk with Ameriprise financial advisor Michael Toole at ClearPoint Capital about the exclusive Confident Retirement approach to see if you're prepared for your financial future. Personalized, goal-based financial advice from an advisor like Mike and his team at ClearPoint Capital can help you navigate today while still staying on track for your long-term financial goals tomorrow.